Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, hello, and welcome back. Chase Thomas Podcast, Preds Power Hour. It's on the podcast. We're all back. It's been a few, has it been like 2 months since we last did a pod? Things have changed. The Preds are officially a playoff team. There's no doubting it now. Unfortunately for the two men on this podcast with myself, where I was the only one, and let me be perfectly clear and perfectly frank for Preds Nation tuning in here. I never doubted. I had this before the year. Brian and Jeff could not have been less on board with the administration of Barry Trotz and Andrew Burnett, but only myself and only me alone was all in on this being a playoff team this year. But I'm joined by Ryan O'Reilly's number one fan of OnTheForecheck.com, Brian Baston. Brian, good evening, sir. How are you?
Pretty good, man. Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, it's going to be hard to pick who my number one fan is. I mean, I might have to call myself Jeremy Lazan's number one fan just after how this season's gone. So, yeah, I mean, we're all about taking victory laps like some of us have already, or you know, recognizing when we're wrong. I'm going to say one of those guys, the main man for me is Jeremy friggin' Lazan.
Jeremy freaking Lazan, and also here of everywhere, all over the place, the man's writing. I just never know what to list here with Jeff Middleton, because like I don't even know what is the main one for Jeff, but you're reading Jeff somewhere probably right now. Jeff Middleton, yeah, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'll say there is no main one as of now. Usually it's the school newspaper, but hey, I mean, what can you do? But yeah, no, it's I'm doing well. It's good to be back. I'm excited to dive into all this. It's been a hectic last 2 months.
Yeah, it has. It definitely has. But we're going to get into the last 2 months and really what happened here with the Preds, and that they got a wild card spot here after all is said and done. And to kind of put this all in perspective, Brian, so they get the first wild card spot, a big time crazy win streak to get here. It was supposed to be a rebuilding year, as we talked about going in, and we were kind of wondering, like, do they tear it down more? Is UC Saros on the trade block potentially at the deadline? Do they continue getting younger? Do they continue playing young guys, experimenting more, and just, hey, thinking for the future and kind of preparing Nashville fans for, hey, you wanted to rebuild. You wanted to finally tear it down. Now you're going to get it. And it looked ugly a little bit, and it looked like it may go that way. And then the script just was completely flipped, Brian Baston. So what happened over the last 2 months? Why were the Preds able to go on this win streak, and why are they now a playoff team when just about everyone did not see this coming?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, obviously we're going to talk about this more later, but I mean, what Andrew Brunette has put into the system is working. I mean, I think that you could still look at this roster and say that it's not really probably where the franchise wants it. But then again, look at how good they've been since we started 2024. But they're buying into Andrew Brunette hockey. I mean, you look at the top line of Forsberg and O'Reilly and Nyquist. I mean, those guys have been just insane. I mean, just it's, you know, we talked about the Forsberg, Duchesne and Granlund line a few years back. And before that, it was the Jofa line. And these guys are better. Just hands down, these guys are better. These are, you know, this line, when they're on the ice at any point in time, no matter what the score is, you know, there's a chance that Nashville will claw back into the game or put the game away with one of those three guys. I mean, you look at Ryan O'Reilly on the power play. Gustav Nyquist was, I mean, just insane this season. He had both of those guys, you know, discovered the fountain of youth this year. And, you know, I think Nyquist had career highs in goals, points, assists. I mean, just an incredible like stat line. And, you know, that's, you're playing with Philip Forsberg, you're playing with Ryan O'Reilly, but these are guys that are older. These were kind of guys that they came and they went and got, you know, out of free agency. And there wasn't a ton expected for them. I mean, most people saw like O'Reilly being a really good player, but probably, you know, you talk about veteran leadership and all that other stuff coming in. You don't expect him to come in here and play like the Ryan O'Reilly. But then you look on the other hand and you have a line, which one of the most dangerous, if you look at analytics and just, you know, how good they've been, is that Tommy Novak, Luke Evangelista, Kiefer Sherwood line. You know, the Novak and Evangelista combination has just been absolutely crazy. I mean, I think they've got something like at 5-on-5, like a 75% goals for percentage. So, I mean, like they're for every, you know, three goals they're getting, they're only giving up one when they're on the ice. I mean, that's a hell of a line for you to be able to come and usually play in fourth line minutes. You know, you can get those guys in there. You've got a strong second line. And then of course you've got the big beefy, you know, Michael McCarron, you know, keep sure Cole Smith, which Cole Smith, I don't think I could recall one time we've heard anything really Preds Twitter get too upset about Cole Smith. And I think it's for good reason. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's playing almost like a Colton Sissons type role, which again, Colton Sissons year. It's just the way he goes. He gets older and he stays the same. But I mean, and you look at, you know, how these players have all come on, and you can see as the season went on, you know, the team got better. I mean, Forsberg, I mean, we'll talk more about him, but 48 goals. I mean, just completely smashed through the franchise record set by Duchesne a few years back. And he didn't have a goal, I think, until like 8 or 9 games into the season. You look at Roman Josi, who had a pretty slow start, and now he's firmly, you know, in talks for the Vezina, 23 goals and 85 points. I mean, that's another Roman Josi year, but he's just hit another level. And, you know, there are some surprises in the lineup that we see, you know, guys that we thought would be playing a whole lot more, or guys we thought wouldn't be playing that have been taking, you know, pretty big roles. But, you know, I think that what makes this most impressive, and really probably the most impressive thing about Andrew Brunette in this first year, is that they've done all of this with just pretty okay goaltending. I mean, Juuse Saros and Kevin Lankinen, I think ranked like 26th and 28th in goals above replacement. I mean, that's not a huge gap, and that's not what we're used to seeing out of Juuse Saros. But, you know, gone are the days where this team gets dragged to the playoffs on the back of a Pekarinen or Juuse Saros, you know, having to play out of their minds to get, you know, to steal wins. I mean, Nashville's doing it without him. I mean, they played very well during the point streak and everything, but it really, you can't really say that, you know, oh, that they won so many games because of their goaltending. And that's the first time in a while. So, I mean, you look at this, you look at what this roster is and how it's still in the beginning stages of what it can be, you know, coupled with the fact that I don't know that Juuse Saros is like he's always going to be just this good from now on. I mean, it's about time he was allowed to have a mediocre season, not even mediocre. I mean, he was still good, but just not a regular Juuse Saros season. And, you know, you get him playing back up his level, and, you know, you add some more pieces as the years go on. What Andrew Brunette has done has just been, I mean, I said it before the season, if Nashville made the playoffs, Andrew Brunette should be coach of the year. And I still believe he should be the number one choice for the Jack Adams. I mean,
do you think he wins?
It's going to be tough. I think that he has gotten a lot more recognition. The problem is, and the thing that hurts me deep inside, is that his biggest competitor, and a guy that I still might, it's going to be hard to not give him the edge, is New York's Peter Laviolette, who I was very, very wrong about with how they what they were doing with the Rangers. I still am curious to see, because he steps into to good to, you know, average teams and is able to elevate him in the first couple of years. But I mean, they won the President's Trophy. So, and they did it, you know, using a roster spot on a guy that they brought in simply only to fight. I mean, not just to be like, oh, he's our enforcer. No, they brought in Adrian Rempe and they said, this guy is here to punch you and that's it. And they still won the President's Trophy. So it's going to be tough. I think other guys like Rick Dache and Vancouver should definitely be up there. I think the campaign that a lot of NHL writers, where they all thought that it should be John Tortorella in the top three, you know, with Brunetti not even in there, I think that should probably be put to rest now. I think I'm not sure why there was so much hype so late for him. But I mean, yeah, I think he has as strong a case as anybody else. And to look at what he did with this team, the talent level that's on this team compared to the Rangers, compared to what's on Vancouver, I'm sorry. I just don't think there's a better coaching job done in, I don't know, maybe a couple of years, two or three seasons, than what Andrew Brunette has done. And that's not even the homer in me. That's just, it's just the truth. This team was not supposed to be this. They should have been, you know, I thought if they made the playoffs, they'd be clawing in and we'd be waiting for, you know, the very last night of the season to see if Nashville could snag that eight spot. Instead, what, it's been four or five days since they clinched, and it's been kind of just chill waiting for the season to end. I mean, they made their way, you know, got themselves into a playoff spot and never let go. And they played, you know, we never saw them fade towards the end of the stretch or anything like that. They just played Predators hockey and did it and put themselves in the playoff. There was no doubt whether they belonged. They are in.
Jeff, anything more that Brian missed there as to what played the most into this run for the Preds?
I mean, no, I think he covered it all pretty well.
I mean,
he went line by line and then just did all of the, I mean, he covered everybody. So,
I have a question for you.
He was like, that man was spitting. That was like the whole meme here.
Yeah, I mean, he got it all.
Well, I'm curious because I think I did something prior to the season. Cause I thought, you know, with Jess Belmosto over on Locked On Flames where, got to need a second. You good, Chase?
Okay. Oh, no, I just meant like y'all keep going and I'll be right back. Give me 1 second.
Okay. Yeah, no. I mean, I you know, looking at Calgary and Nashville kind of going by like similar situations as you know,
yeah,
going into this season. Like, what do you think the differences were between, you know, Calgary and what Nashville was able to do? And, you know, what do you think the differences were and why Nashville was able to be a little bit more successful?
I mean, I would say that, like, it absolutely does start with coaching. I think that the high end skill players for Nashville are much more high end than Calgary. I think that we saw a lot of improvement from guys like Jonathan Huberdeau, especially in the back half of the season. I mean, for a couple months, 3 months, he was almost a point per game, if not a point per game. And then Nazem Kadri bounced back. Blake Coleman was phenomenal. Jaeger Sharangovich was unreal. Like, they had those guys, but I mean, nobody has scored on that team nearly as much as, I mean, 94 points for Forsberg. Yossi is 85. I mean, Mackenzie Weegar, I mean, he has a chance to, I mean, he surpassed his career high goal total, and he's still not, I mean, he was up in the goal statistic, but not near Yossi in points. Nyquist was 75 points. I mean, they just don't have those really like elite scorers, I would say. I think Huberdeau could have been that, but obviously he has been kind of a shell of himself. I mean, their top point scorer is Kadri with 75 points.
Nice little season for him though.
Oh yeah, but no, very good bounce back season, but that's tied with Gus Nyquist. That would be their top scorer, would be third on the Preds in points. And, you know, their top scorer is, their top goal scorer is Yegor Sharangovich with 31. And he's the only person that's hit 31 that's hit the 30 goal plate. So you have Kadri and Coleman at 29, both. And then Weegar can hit 20. If he has one more game to hit 20, which is still a very good total for a defenseman, but you know, it's just the play of the top end guys has been
much different. I think the goaltending has been better for the Flames. I think Jacob Markstrom has been better than UC Saros this year. Not by much, but I think that there's been stretches where he's been really good. Dustin Wolf's been phenomenal so far in the starts that he's had. It started off a little shaky, but he's been good recently. And I think Ryan Huska has done a really good job, but I think he just plays a different style compared to Andrew Brunett. So when you see the scoring go up, I think I would say the beginning of the season kind of set them back a lot, because they started with a horrible record, and that month of October for them was really, really bad. I don't remember exactly what the record was. I bet I could find it in that month of October, but that entire first month was brutal for them. And that I think that kind of set the tone. I mean, they kind of recovered a little bit, and they got to over 500, and then they kept losing, and it was just kind of like it just was not something that looked like it was going to work. I mean, yeah, the month of October, they won one game or two games. They won their first game against the Jets, and then they won against the Sabres. But then after that, they lost six in a row. So it was just kind of that kind of just back and forth, not a lot of consistency. That was a big thing as well. I think the Preds, obviously we're going to talk about it, but the win streak was, you know, it made the season what it is. I mean, you have one really, really long streak of winning, and that's going to help your playoff chances. And the Flames never really could find that, let alone, I mean, you have teams that are playoff teams that don't score, that don't have guys that don't score a lot. I mean, Carolina's kind of that example, but they're consistently good. They can win games. They go on streaks. They're not, you know, when they lose, they bounce back. And over the course of the Flames season, and where I think that's a big difference, is they would win two and then lose three, or they'd win four and then lose three. And it would just be kind of like a back and forth. Like it just wasn't. The new year was good, and then it just kind of tumbled off. So I think that's the difference. I think the top end scoring still isn't enough from guys that they're paying a lot of money. Even though, you know, guys like Blake Coleman and Yegor Sharangovich stepping up is a huge help, but then the consistency has to be there for them to win games. And I think that's where they really lack in terms of relative to the Predators.
I mean, I think it's crazy. And, you know, you've been a Preds fan probably a little bit longer than I have, but I mean, to hear a team being described and being saying, you know, comparing it to the Nashville and being like, well, you know, the goaltending was a little bit better, but you know, Calgary just didn't have the elite type of scorers that Nashville have. I mean, when was the last time you could describe that? I mean, it's not, if there was any doubt as to whether, you know, Philip Forsberg belongs as a, you know, in the elite of, you know, forwards in the NHL, I think he's put that to bed. I mean, I think that, I mean, the man was, you know, ended up being two goals away from 50 and six points away from 100.
Yeah. Healthy Philip Forsberg is a 100-point scorer easily.
I mean, he, you know, you look at that game, you know, a few games back, you know, everybody was watching and thinking, okay, this is the game that he sets the franchise record. You know, he was like, yeah, you know what? Hat trick. Why not? Yeah. Let's just do it. I mean, and you look at all the goals and everything he's done. I mean, it's Phil being Phil, but I think, again, look at guys like a guy like Brunett, his putting Philip Forsberg and using his strengths, you know, the move where Philip Forsberg is, you know, comes up the right wall and comes right off, you know, almost horizontally off the half wall towards the net. I mean, he's victimized so many guys with that little move. And that's something that shouldn't really be that effective. I mean, you got guys that are collapsing in, you're cutting off those angles for the goaltender, and yet he's still able to, you know, cut through a defense like that, cross the goalie's face, and then put the puck wherever he chooses. It's pretty fantastic. I mean, what we watched Philip Forsberg do this season is something, I don't know. It's special, because I don't know that, you know, any player, period, has ever been as dominant as, you know, in gold as Philip Forsberg has this regular season.
Yeah, I think just quickly, I think me and my dad were talking about it when I was back home for spring break, and we went to a couple games. We were comparing it to, I mean, we're all Devils fans. You guys know that, and but just in case anybody listening doesn't know that, my dad, that side of the family, me, brother, all big Devils fans as well. And we compared Philip Forsberg to Jack Hughes in a way that, you know, when he's healthy, you can a huge difference in the kind of control he has on the game when he's not healthy and when he is healthy. And this last stretch for Jack Hughes, you could kind of tell that he wasn't 100%. Whereas this season, there wasn't a time where you looked at Philip Forsberg's play and were like, maybe he's hurt. Because the way that he was able to control the pace of the game so much more than, like, it's just, I mean, you can see it from the nosebleeds. It's tangible. The way that he controls the puck when he's a healthy, when he's fully, it's night and day compared to that. And obviously that goes for other star players as well. If they're playing hurt, they're not going to be, you know, they're not going to be controlling it as much as possible. But I think just from watching Forsberg and Hughes kind of play against each other healthy and then play one play against the other not very healthy, you can tell when the spark is going and when the light, the motors are churning and stuff like that. Like, I think that it's a big difference. And this year you didn't really have a doubt that Philip Forsberg was healthy because of how, even if he wasn't scoring, he was contributing in other ways.
Oh yeah.
I like it. In terms of Jeremy Lauzon, though, the hits for like someone who's not like a like fully in like who doesn't understand everything about like hockey, with the NHL record hits, like what does that do for a team and why is that an important moniker for folks?
Oh boy, I could go on about hits, but Brian, you take it.
Yeah, I'll take a little bit and I'll let you handle it, most of it. But I mean, for me, I'm not a guy who believes a ton. Like, it's really cool. It's a really cool thing that he was able to do that. I mean, that's something that you've got to be healthy to be able to pull that off. I mean, you know, you're what, 79 games out of 82? I mean, that's really impressive for a guy who's in there, you know, to bruise. But you know, you look at guys like him and McCarron, you look at, for better or worse, Luke Shen, Kiefer Sherwood, those types of guys, like they're in there to be bruisers. They're in there to get, you know, physical, but you look at the team and you wouldn't necessarily describe Nashville as a team that is, you know, a physical team that's looking to slow the game down. They're not, they're looking to, you know, they're a high flying, you know, high danger offense. And so what they're doing is they're taking the strengths of what they have in a guy like Lauzon and things like that to be able to make those hits, to be able to disrupt what the other team is doing in transition or in the defensive zone and turn it into quick offense. And it's really complementary. And that's what's really impressive is that, you know, you look at Lauzon, you know, he, you know, analytically not a great year, better than I think I would have expected, but still below replacement level. But you look at, you know, his work with playing alongside Roman Josi. I mean, they were a really, really effective pair working together. And you really wouldn't think about that, but it's what I think Lauzon was able to do in those hits to be able to create opportunities for other guys. But also, on the other hand, it's hits. And I think it's really cool that, you know, 383 hits in a season. I mean, that's crazy. That's what, like four or five, almost five a game, which doesn't seem like a lot, but I mean, the dude's got to be sore. He's got to be hurting. And so, you know, it never was to the detriment of the team. It never really set them back. He wasn't giving up a ton because of those hits, but you know, it's a cool story and a bunch of other records went down. So why not this one?
I mean, Jeff, is there anything more to hits or any, like, is that one of those stats? Is that the hardest like analytical stat to like see the true value, or is there something else that you see? You're like, I don't know if this actually matters to winning hockey.
That's a dumb stat.
I think Brian said it well. I think that hits, it's cool, right? Like, I think when you go, it's a selling point. First of all, I think that it's great that they have that to market, because this may shock some people, but Nashville fans are not the most diehard of all time, really digging into the nitty gritty of hockey analytics and super, you know, really just charging up that analytical brain to figure out best ways for the team to compete.
They are now, though, not with Andrew Brunette. That's the analytics king right there. Yeah.
But I think it's cool for a fan base who is as passionate as Nashville Predators fans are to have that to say. I think that knowing that you can tell somebody who it might be their first game ever, you can say you walk into Bridgestone Arena and you're like, yeah, there's this guy who he might not do anything for the entire night, but you know that he's going to go out and just hit the crap out of the other team. And it's going to be fun. And that's something you can watch out for. But I think when you really look into it, I think, like I said, hits are dumb. And I think they're recorded pretty loosely, depending on the arena that you're in. But I think when you watch the game, it's about being smart. And when you watch the Nashville Predators teams of old, there was a lot of really dumb hitting going around. It was a lot of hitting just to hit people and hitting just to put a body on a body and not playing the puck or not playing or not making the hit to make a play on the puck. Whereas with a lot of Jeremy Lauzon's hits, yes, he got a lot of them, and some of them were dumb, and some of them resulted in goals against. But a lot of them were made for a specific purpose. And that's when I think that hitting is really, like, I think that's when it's a really big part of the game. Because, you know, it's fun for a casual fan to go in and watch a team, you know, beat the crap out of the other team. That's what everybody loves. We're in America. We love NFL football where guys, you know, clash heads all the time and it's just loud and it's manly. But also when you look at it from a strategic point of view and how you want a team to run and how you want a team to generate their offense and generate their transition, hitting can be used to do that. And I think that the one thing that has changed for this Nashville Predators team that I have loved personally is that it's not throwing guys out there just to run a guy down. Like, I think a lot of Cole Smith's game before that, before this year, was that. Like, a guy who can just forecheck and hit people. But I think Cole Smith is better than that. Like, I think he's more than that. And we've seen him do that, but do it with an intention. Do it with an intention to separate a man from a puck or create a transition the other way with the two forwards on his line, you know, helping the puck progress up the ice in a, you know, or find a way to get it back to his defenseman to start the rush. Like, those are the kind of hits that I love. And I think that that's why hitting is important. It's not about, I mean, of course it's about, you know, setting the tone and whatever, but you can only like do that so much. Like, if you're going to set a tone, that's fine. Do that. But you have to be smart with it. I think that if you're not using the hits to put your team in a better position to win the game, then it doesn't mean anything. And that's why I think a lot of, like, you know, I think hits as a counting stat are dumb. I think people generally overrate it. I think that's kind of the old hockey man, like, mindset, like, oh, like, we got to get this guy because he hits a bunch. Whereas then you look at his numbers and he's just not very good. Like, you know, a guy, I think that's happening in just a guy that popped into my head in Toronto right now. Ilya Lyubushkin is not very good at hockey, but he can hit people. And then he's a gritty guy that's going to set the tone. And, you know, Toronto, I guess that's what they need. That's what Brad Treliving thinks that they need. I would disagree. But I think that it's about being smart and intentional with your physicality. And the physicality that we've seen from these Andrew Brunette teams, even in Florida, it was about being intentional and being smart and creating plays through that physicality and not just doing it for the sake of being physical or setting the tone, doing it in a way that you can put your team at an advantage with the puck.
I think there was one more thing, though, because, again, I was trying to think, one, like, is there an equivalent, like, NFL or football stat that I would equate this to? And I can't think of literally anything that's like, it's cool, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I was going to say, like, I don't know, like, your
batting average.
Batting average, something like that. It's one of those that's like, it's there. Agents use it. You know, it's a way to get yourself signed. It's going to make it. But I mean, I think the bigger thing was, as you look at the team, as you know, as we went into the new year, the team was a much better team on the road. For whatever reason, they were just a better road team. And then you get a guy like Lauzon in there who's getting these hits. If he's getting 4 or 5, 6 a night, and, you know, they're well-timed hits, and you start to realize that this dude is hitting everybody all the time, that gets that home crowd in it. And again, like, you know, hits is last on the list of things that, like, if you were trying to, like, really grade a player, look at it. I mean, it's just even statistically, you're not going to put a lot of value into hits. I can't imagine there's many models out there that do, but there is a point to them. And it's one of those things where, you know, the eye test is could be better. And that's why you use one with the other. But, you know, at the last few weeks, you know, especially the folks over there at PBR, you know, they did a great job of highlighting, you know, the entire run to them getting, you know, Lazan chasing that milestone. Like every time he'd make a hit, the crowd would pop, and that's what you want. And you know, now you look at Nashville's record and they have a pretty good home record too, so they balanced out. And you know, this year of all, like, I think Andrew Brunette had to tell the Smashville fans, hey, you know what, I get it, this is supposed to be a rebuilding year, you don't know what you're going to be seeing. And he put out a really compelling argument to say, hey, come watch this team play. And yeah, now look at it, where Nashville is. You know, it's going to be another one of those years where, you know, they're going to go into the playoffs, they're going to have a massive crowd, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have the celebrities up in the box, you're going to have all this stuff and all the hype. And I mean, who knows? I mean, you really don't know what this team's capable of. I mean, I think you could easily see them, you know, just barely losing in six in round one, and you could see them, you know, making it to the Western Conference Finals. It you never know. I don't know what this team can do. I mean, their potential when they play well is incredible, and when they don't, they're still scrappy and can fight for it. So it's fans like that, and I think that's, you know, that's done a lot for this franchise, knowing that they took a huge risk, you know, kind of shutting everything down, burning it all down and starting over. And they took bets on their own guys, and they were right on almost every single one of them.
I love it. In terms though of not Andrew Brunette, but more Barry Trotz here, I think there was a lot of, because it's now been a while since he was brought back to Nashville, I think there was fairly a lot of skepticism about putting him into this GM role. It's always a little bit weird when you put the coaches into these kind of GM type positions, and there was concern about what kind of long-term roster management structure Barry would fall into. And early on, it was one of those things where you're like, oh, I don't necessarily like what this is doing. And then Andrew Brunette kind of felt like a different kind of hire. Like, it felt like maybe they didn't match. They weren't going to be a perfect match in terms of their style and eras, this, that, and the other. But they really kind of come together, and it's kind of worked out. And it's still really early, but it's worked out, I think, fair to say, through one season here. But in terms of how the season ultimately went, and based on what Barry did at the deadline, based on what Barry did this summer, what grade would you give Barry Trotz year one as Nashville GM?
I think I'd probably give him like a B+. I mean, I think B+, A-. I mean, I feel like he did a good job. I mean, I think there wasn't much really to do other than add a couple pieces that, you know, push down some maybe more meh players in the lineup. You know, I think that he got good value for Jason Zucker. I like that trade. I was a little weirded out when it actually happened. And then when the return was put out there, I was like, okay, that's obviously, you should do that. Like, that's another guy, playoff experience, played next to a guy that, you know, a guy that you might know, Evgeny Malkin, pretty good. I mean, I don't know. But
he's all right.
Yeah, he's just all right. You know, played next to him for years, played with Sidney freaking Crosby, another guy that's just all right. And I think, like, that's a good trade. I think Anthony Beauvillier is a little bit of a hit or miss. I think he can be something, maybe. He is Barry Trotz's guy, so I kind of was like, all right. He's speed. I mean, that's kind of what he is, speed, forecheck. He can do things with the puck occasionally. He had a few games that were just really rough with the Preds, I think a week or two ago. But yeah, he's just been kind of whatever. I mean, I think he could be something in the playoffs. He was helpful when the Isles, under Barry Trotz, when the Isles were doing their thing in the playoffs. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that there wasn't really much else to do. Didn't move Saros, didn't need to.
But I think that goes into his grade, is that he didn't do too much, right? Like, I think we have to factor that in, is that there wasn't a lot to do, but he could have done a lot more. There was a lot of other things he could have done in year one. Barry Trotz could have blown this thing up significantly more. So I think that has to factor into his grade, right?
I mean, I think so, yeah. I don't think that the moves he made were bad. I think that he's done a pretty good job of, and I think also it helps when he's explained himself pretty well. I think it, you know, listening to his press conference after the deadline, stuff like that, like, I think he did a pretty good job. I mean, he traded Trent in. I think that was a good move. You know, some people might disagree with that, but I think that they needed to get, I don't think Trennan was coming back. He got Bovilia Zucker and then traded Gurianov for Wade Allison. That didn't do anything. So he made four moves at the deadline, and, you know, two of them I think were good. One of them was just meh, but could pay off, and the other was just a whatever AHL deal. So I think, you know, there was other stuff that he could have done, but, like, I didn't think it wouldn't have been anything that I think would have really, like, tanked or, like, made his grade. Like, I think there were a couple guys, I think he could have traded Tyson Barry, but that wouldn't have done anything, for, at least for my grade. I mean, he wouldn't have gotten much anyway. I think it would have been a Jason Zucker situation where you kind of give up a sixth round pick or something like that. The other team gives up a sixth round pick or whatever. Yeah, I think, you know, it does affect it, but I don't know if the trades he could have made would have been anything that would have really, like, flipped the script, I guess, to say it. So I think sticking with, like, a B+, A-, I feel like that's okay, at least in my opinion.
Do you share that sentiment, Brian?
I mean, he made a lot of good points, and they're all pretty right, but I mean, look at what you gained from signing two guys, both 33 and 34 years old, making $7.6 million combined between them. And they might have ended up being two parts of the most productive first line in franchise history. I mean, nobody expected. I mean, you still hear Toronto fans getting mad, you know, Ryan O'Reilly couldn't handle the spotlight in Toronto, whatever, he's got to hear. And thank you. Appreciate that. You look at, you know, some of the guys that are important that has been signed already. I mean, it seems like no-brainers now, but I mean, the fact that, you know, you've got Tommy Novak now under contract, getting $3.5 million a year, absolutely deserved. Mark Jankowski, getting him for another couple of years. Michael McCarron, I mean,
Luke Shen is still terrible.
Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, like, Dante Fabro has another year on this. I mean,
Barry Trotz, Dante Fabro, respecter. Let's go. my main man. Thank you, Barry.
Yeah. But point being is, like, you know, yes, you can talk about guys like Luke Shen, which, whatever. The second lowest rated player analytically on this roster. We'll talk about more about who the lowest one is. But I mean, you look at guys like, you know, how they've managed, you know, calling guys up from the AHL. It's not been super reliant. I mean, Nashville, I think, is what, the only Western Conference team that didn't even touch LTIR this season, which, you know, staying healthy like that is really, really lucky. But, you know, they didn't have to, you know, worry about, you know, taking a bunch of players out from Milwaukee to kind of stay afloat. Like, they just did it. You got guys like, you know, Kiefer Sherwood and what he's done. You have what Luke Evangelista is doing right now. Guys like Bovilier, who's always my boy for shooting his shot with Anna Kendrick. I will always respect that man for that. That's one of my favorite stories ever. But I mean, like, yeah, you get guys like him or like Luke Shen. I mean, yeah, Jakob Trenin. I think it was one of those where, like, Jakob Trenin was a fan favorite and they made that trade and people aren't really that hung up on it. Like, yeah. I think he's like top 10, like one of the best penalty killing forwards in the entire NHL this season. But I mean, like, those moves were made, you know, with purpose and nothing, you know. Yeah, there were some AHL deals here and there, but I mean, honestly, he could have blown things up. He could have traded bigger pieces, but he didn't. You also didn't see him go out there and mortgage the farm and give up the capital that they've built up by trying to get guys, you know, getting a guy like Jason Zucker is not like a here we go, we're going to win. But it's still more than what most people expected when we were just like, yeah, sell or just kind of stay still. I mean, Saros, we're going to see how that goes. But I mean, again, you look at Askarov, you look at Saros, look at the year Kevin Lankinen had, bringing him back. It's, I mean, considering everything he did, I mean, we haven't even talked about the fact about Matt Duchene one time this whole episode. Haven't talked about Matt Duchene. You know, we've got Johansson that's gone. You know, we're not talking about Matthias Ekholm. We're not talking about any of those guys. You know, Gorianov. Yeah, I completely forgot that he got traded. So, I mean, it's one of those things that I don't know. I mean, it's if you want to grade him on based on like, did he make a bunch of moves that made this team a whole lot better? Well, he did it in the offseason. Yeah. I mean, I think that like if there's anything that's going to keep him from being in contention for, you know, GM of the year is GM of the year almost always goes to a GM who has a really, really good team and they made a really, really big trade or they made a huge splash at like the deadline. I mean, when Poile won it, it was the year after the PK trade. You know, it's I don't know. It's hard to sit there and point at Barry Trotz and say what he did was fantastic. But I mean, gosh, just looking at, you know, Nyquist and O'Reilly, like that alone should really kind of put him up there that this team, you know, they had to do ugly stuff. They, you know, there's a lot of money on the books that they on players that they don't get to play over the next few years. But I mean, he architected, he burned this thing down, built it in the image he wanted, and look where they're at now. It's hard for me to give him anything less than an A.
I love that. And I mean, every Preds fan, like, I mean, do you feel great about the future now? Or, and I mean, this kind of is one of those things, what I was talking about, like why I thought this team would ultimately be in the playoffs is a lot of it was like, my gut told me like Barry Trotz is a former longtime coach is these kind of guys lend themselves to let's not like they know it can get ugly. It can get ugly in a hurry. And it's way easier to say we will rebuild and we will tear this thing to the bare bones and we will get it back up to what we were and we'll get it better than ever. Like it's a lot easier. Like theoretical rebuilding is so much more fun than actual rebuilding. And part of it was like, I think a former coach, a longtime coach, is going to lean more on what if I can do this through the middle? What if I can kind of weave, it might be more difficult to thread this needle, but I think I can do it. And I think that's what Barry Trotz is ultimately going to try to do here is I think he is going to try and thread this needle with the stars he has, see what he can do this offseason, see what pops up in trades, see what some of these young guys do over the next year or two, and see if he can put together a contender this way and be like, hey, you know, this was a perennial playoff team. I moved on some guys, but we still have a pretty good baseline here altogether, and I can keep adding and I can keep being creative a little bit. So to me, I just look at the Barry Trotz tenure. What I'm most curious about going into year two is, does he get aggressive the other way? Because this offseason, he wasn't aggressive. The deadline, he wasn't aggressive. I wonder, maybe it depends on how the playoffs go for this Preds team. What kind of run do they make? How far do they advance? Does that play into his thinking here? But for me, I am most curious, does Barry Trotz go, let's ride this momentum and see what more I can do to turn this team into one of the best teams in the Western Conference going into next year?
Why? Why try to go out and change what you're doing? I mean, yeah. you look at the guys that are unrestricted free agents after this year: Zucker, Bevilier, Barry. You know, there's Carrier, Sherwood. You know,
who do you think is priority one for him?
For any of those guys?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he's smart, Carrier. But I mean, like, okay. I would say Carrier is probably the only guy I would say is a high priority. The rest of the guys,
I think he already signed priority number one in Tommy Novak. So
yeah.
I mean like he doesn't have to. He doesn't re-sign Zucker, Bevilier, and Barry. That is almost what $14.5 million right off the cap. And that's just what he can, and again, why go out there and say, okay, let's go grab a guy for that's, you know, getting $9 million a year. Why? I mean, look what he did with this roster, plugging pieces in, finding pieces. I mean, look at Spencer Stastny and like how good he's been in just a short amount of time since he's been called up. You look at, you know, what they've done over the past couple of years with Jankowski, with Evangelista, with, you know, those types of guys. you get guys in there that you're going to solidify what this team already does. You know, look for the guys that can go out there and fit in and play this style of hockey and complement what's already going on. I mean, you always have to be on the lookout for regression, but I don't think there's a rush. I think you can continue. You got a good draft, you know, got good draft capital, of course. You've got Roman Josi, you've got Philip Forsberg, you've got these guys locked up. You know, you've got Ryan O'Reilly locked up for another 3 years. I mean, if he gets the itch to really go for it, I mean, deadline maybe, depending on how the season's going, but why wait? Like, wait until like year three. I don't think there's any pressure really, because what they've done, the slow and steady approach, has worked. And why throw away a bunch of money long term on something that may or may not work, kind of how things have gone previously, and knowing that the core he's got, you can switch guys in, switch guys out, and still get this team. I mean, again, like this team, imagine if UC Saros was playing at the level he played last year or the year before. I mean, they could be sitting on top of the Central. I mean, that's how it is. I mean, you have average Saros over the last 3 years, not counting this one. I mean, they're up there probably sitting at Central number two. It's a very good team. So I wouldn't, getting aggressive is probably not the right answer. I would say doing things that are smart and good value adds. Like, I don't think they're going to surprise and find another Ryan O'Reilly type of thing. But I mean, we said that last year and look what he did. So yeah, there's no reason to swing for the fences unless some guy comes along that's going to just absolutely wow you and would be amazing. Yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, Barry. I think you've got this, and it's pretty obvious that anybody who is questioning what you're doing has got a pretty good answer as to, you know, you responded very, very well.
I want to address something that Chase said about, you know, he could have torn it down and all this rebuild stuff, and it's easier to theoretically rebuild than actually do it. And I agree, but I think one of the things that people, fans of the team, and even I have criticized the team about, is the lack of, before this year, superstar talent.
Mm.
I think that the lack of firepower was something that fans had a genuine concern, you know, that they had a genuine reason to be concerned about. I think that, you know, when you look at Stanley Cup winning teams and Stanley Cup contenders, they have that guy, that like the guy that they can really, really trust. You know, you have the McKinnons, the Robertsons, the Duchesnes now, apparently, since he's, you know, Dallas he's continued his stuff in Dallas. You know, obviously like the Kucherovs, the Pasternaks, the McDavids, the Matthews, I could go on, but I think when, like, before this season, that was a genuine concern. And I think that that was why a lot of fans were kind of like, you know, if this is looking iffy, why not just, you know, blow it up? I think that's, going back to an earlier point, I think that's where Calgary Flames fans are right now. I think that they have some firepower, they don't have enough. And they don't have like that really big superstar kind of guy that can score up.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Bunch of points that can take over games. They can do, you know, whatever he wants, pretty much. But this year, I think that
it's quieted down, not only because the fans have liked watching the team more. I think that overall the fan sentiment has been very positive in just how the team has played, even when they're not winning games. I think that a lot of it is it's high pace, high speed, high intensity, you know, best passing. I've watched this team for a while, and it's the best passing I think I've ever seen them do consistently. You know, special teams has been really fun to watch, all that stuff. But I think also this year you got to see what it looks like when the Nashville Predators have an elite scorer, an elite scorer that they did not have before. Because Philip Forsberg, when he only plays 60 games, is very good, but he is not an elite goal scorer, and he's not an elite scorer in general. And that's just how it is. That's just how his career has gone. And that's, you know, now that he's in his prime and he's playing 82 games in a season, 81 games in a season, this is the high-end talent that Predators fans before this year in the John Hines era, I guess I could say, were clamoring for, because they didn't have that. They didn't have that guy that could really, really take that step up and score 90 points, score 100 points consistently. But Philip Forsberg is that guy. And I think there are fans who said that he just needs to be healthy. But up until this point, that was a big question mark, was whether or not he could be healthy for a full season. And now that he's shown that, it's, you know, thank you. This is what we needed as people who just watched this team, to be reassured that he can do this and he can be that guy. But I think, like, when you look back, it's interesting now looking back on that, and like, it was a lot of they're missing a lot of scoring. And when you look at the Stanley Cup contending teams that obviously the Predators management wanted them to be, they had that guy. They had the one guy or the two guys that could be that. And when you have a fully healthy Philip Forsberg who can score 90 to 100 points every year when he's right, and you're Roman Josi, who can score 80 to 90 points a year as a defenseman, even though he's getting older, which that is something to watch out for. But I mean, he's Roman Josi. He's unreal. Mm-hmm. His skating talent alone is going to be, you know, it'll last him the rest of his career. But that's beside the point. When you have those two guys that are fully healthy and are healthy consistently, it's a game changer. It changes the entire outlook of the franchise. And I think that obviously you want to get the best young talent that you can and hope that they pan out into an elite scorer, so that, you know, when a guy like Roman Josi ages out of his 80 to 90 point years, you can replace him with a guy who can do that and step up, where you can still have Roman Josi in a role where he can score. But I think that it changes the entire trajectory of the franchise when you have Philip Forsberg be healthy, like just him alone. But then you add in O'Reilly, Nyquist, all this other stuff, and you just have this line that is healthy consistently and can score. It's a complete game changer. And I think that, you know, obviously there's guys that you could look at signing in the offseason. I think Steven Stamkos might be really interesting, just as a as a veteran.
Fun.
It would be very fun. I agree. I think you're just adding another threat. You're adding a guy who can be on the power play, who knows how to win Stanley Cups. That's he's played with Luke Shen before. Like, I think that he has connections. I think that adding that kind of guy is different than just, you know, pay him $8 million and see whatever happens. I think there's a calculated understanding of what Steven Stamkos as a player, not saying that they're going to sign him, but his name was thrown out by, I think, Jeff Merrick earlier in the year, I think a month ago. And I thought that was really interesting, because there are calculated reasons as to why you might sign Steven Stamkos on a cheaper deal. Yes, he's older, but just because he's older, one is if you put a guy like Steven Stamkos with, you know, even guys on the second line, you have Nyquist, Forsberg, and O'Reilly, you could put Luke Evangelista with Steven Stamkos. That'd be pretty fun. Or Tommy Novak, or you know, whoever you want up there. But again, I think that's the kind of guy you could really look at signing. I think that would be an interesting guy to look at, because he's not going to be, if somebody pays him as much as he's making right now, I'd frankly be insane. But I think that I would like to see if there's one guy that they go after. I think I'd like to see Stamkos on a short term kind of thing. But either way, I think that just to recap my rant, it was about I love the idea. This franchise is different now. They didn't do a lot. They added presence and experience, but everything changes when you have Philip Forsberg healthy. And I think that's what this comes down to. And when you talk about moving towards the future, you have to keep that in mind. Obviously, add if you can, but Philip Forsberg healthy is your elite goal scoring forward, power forward that can do everything when he's right. And that's, you know, that's the guy you're going to turn to lead the team.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about like Steven Stamkos. Like, I think that would be like a year three kind of Trotz move. I mean, like, if it was up to me, like, I like that idea of that. But I mean, my guess is like, if it just going based off what we know from last year, like, if you wanted to go after a guy of that caliber, I could see maybe seeing if they could get like a Tarasenko to pay cut. But I think you would be much more likely to see a guy like, you know, Anthony Duclair, Anthony Mantha.
Love either of those guys. I said they should have gotten Duclair a couple years ago.
He's one of the favorites for everybody. I mean, like, yeah. If you could pry away, I mean, a lot of these guys are restricted free agents because I saw Seth Jarvis on there and I was like, oh, but no, he's not going anywhere. But I mean, like, that's going to be the kind of, it's not going to be, you know, it's going to be like David Perron. Like, it's, you know, like those types of signings you're going to see. And it's not going to be the, you know, Marchessault or Sam Reinhardt or anybody like that. Like, I just don't see that happening. Tyler Toffoli is very interesting. I could get behind that one, but I don't think Winnipeg's going to let him go. But you know, like, I just don't see that type of a splash. Like, I think you're going to see those middle of the lineup type guys, you know, like that. It's not going to be, it's not going to like blow anybody away. Nobody's, you know, it's not going to break Fred's Twitter when some of these signings happen, but they're going to be ones that we're going to look back on and be like, oh, you know, just,
but I mean, see, I think they're going to have to do that. Like, I think that would be a mistake from Barry if he doesn't double down into let's ride this momentum. We need to be aggressive. For instance, Jeff Middleton, sorry, Jack Hughes, on your way to Nashville. Sorry, buddy, get ready to learn Nashville, Jack Hughes. It's time to make the trade. Like, if I'm Barry Trotz, I look at this as like, hey, I was going to rebuild, plans change. We're a playoff team. This is fun. Let's get more fun. Let's go offense heavy. Let's just take a big swing. Like, I think I would not go status quo because I think they will actually fall backwards. I think you're way more likely to take a step back. And then fans are like, well, that year was, because I think part of it, and this is why team building is so fascinating, is like, when, if they do that, I think fans will you'll lose so much good faith with the fans, because then they're going to look at this year as like, well, this was a waste. Because now you just kick the can down down the road a little bit longer with our rebuild because you didn't do a whole lot. And then you thought, oh, well, this is actually good enough. We can be a perennial playoff team and just quietly and take our time keeping this thing humming and get us back to real contention. But there is a sneaky risk in going down that road. I think it's less risky for Barry Trotz and Burnett to actually go all in this offseason and be like, hey, I don't know how much longer UC Saros has got. I don't know how much longer Forsberg has got playing at this kind of level. I don't know if I can really trust these young guys just yet. Let's lean in a little bit more and go get a superstar that Jeff's talked about for years in Nashville. Let's go and just open up the checkbook, do whatever we got to do, take this goodwill. Because then if it flames out anyway, fans will be like, hey, that was awesome. We tried. We went for it. We had something for a little bit. We thought it was something. But and you still wind up where you were going to be altogether, which is back in the lottery and back as a non-playoff team for years. I would be very hesitant if I'm Barry Trotz in this ownership and this front office to think that you can just run this back for the next couple of years and make minor tweaks and be able to keep it going. Because I've seen this in so many different sports that it never goes that way, and that you're way more likely to fall back out. And then fans are kind of annoyed that this year will be kind of a waste in terms of the timeline and getting us to where we ultimately want to be. Does that make sense?
I agree. Yeah. I think that honestly, that's part of that is why I think Steven Stamkos is a great idea, just because one, it's a cool Steven Stamkos is the man. He's a goal. Yeah. He's a fantastic goal scorer, incredible player. You won't have to sign him for as much. And you know, he supplements some of, because personally, like, I think that this roster is still not very good. Just looking at their line combinations, I think that overall they need more. And I think that that's where a guy like Steven Stamkos can come in. But I also think, again, taking this back to the Devils, just because that's what I know, you go in last year, you almost win the Metro.
Mm.
You are playing this incredible brand of hockey. You're fast. You're young. You've got so much talent. It's fun to watch. They are a fun team to watch. But then you get to the goaltending, and the goaltending is awful. By, like, it's not even close. League worst goaltending. There is no sup. Like, it's, they need to fix it. And then, but it doesn't matter, because you have guys like Jack Hughes scoring. You have Jesper Brad having career year. You have a Nico Hischier having a career year. You've got the defense. You get John Marino, Ryan Graves. I mean, you just have all of these guys come in. You're built really well up front, but you have this issue that you can kind of push off to the side a little bit. You're still there, and fans knew that. But you have these guys scoring and supplementing that. Fast forward to this year, Jack Hughes gets hurt a lot, so he's not scoring as much. Ryan Graves is gone. Jonas Siegenthaler gets hurt. Dougie Hamilton gets hurt. You have Simon Nemec, who has been phenomenal, but is still a rookie. Luke Hughes, very good offensively, defensively not good at all so far. It doesn't mean he can't get there, but just this year, not been very good. Jesper Bratt's been good. Nico Hischier's been good. Michael McLeod's an asshole. Don't want to talk about him. You have Curtis Lazar. Like, you have these guys. Curtis Lazar's down there. You're filling in for players that are still hurt. But, like, all of that culminates into the defense not being as good and the goaltending getting shown up. And now the Devils are where they are right now. They're out of the playoffs. They beat the Rangers in seven. They play the Carolina Hurricanes. They lose in the second round. They have this bright future ahead of them. They don't address the goaltending, because the goaltending in Akira Schmid and Nico Daws are still very young. They were not very good. And they don't have that guy. And, you know, you have this awesome season. Everybody's super hyped for the next year. You just beat the Rangers, your biggest rival, in seven games. And then you lose to the Hurricanes, but it's fine because you got all these young pieces.
Yeah.
And then everybody gets hurt and the goaltending gets outed for being as bad as it was last year. But the defense wasn't as good, or the defense was much better, and the guys were in front of them were scoring. So it didn't really matter. They could outscore their issues. And there were not many changes made by the head coach and stuff like that. Like, I think that there's, as much as this year has been special for the Preds, I think that I certainly agree with the idea that they can't just, you know, run it back, because we've seen it happen before, even with the Preds. But I think, obviously, I don't think that's what anybody's really advocating for. They're going to sign people, and they're going to have to supplement, you know, they're going to have to supplement things. But, you know, Not everything's going to work out the way that you want it to work out. Not everything's going to be as great as it was this season. Philip Forsberg might not be healthy for 82 games next year.
Yep.
Like, if he plays another, if he only plays 60 games again, then you lose that elite scoring talent, and you got to find a way to supplement it. And the reason the Preds are where they are is because Philip Forsberg almost scored 100 points this year, and his line mates were along with him for the ride. And they've been fantastic. But if Forsberg goes down, not saying Nyquist and O'Reilly can't be effective without him, but they would certainly be much less effective without him. So I think I definitely agree with the idea that, you know, maybe don't, you know, go willy-nilly spending money and go, I don't know, all in is the term, but definitely I would say that, you know, trying to get one or two more guys just as like a cautionary tale, just to kind of, you know, mitigate risk, I think that's definitely something that they should look into.
I'll say this. I'll amend what I said about why change it. I do agree that there is, if I would be very behind Barry Trotz making a big splashy free agent move or a trading for a guy. I think we've all missed a very big point in that if they're going to make a splash and he wants to really make some, like make an impact, it's got to be on defense.
I agree.
I mean, you look at Yossi, Fabro, question mark, and Alex Carrier. I mean, Ryan McDonough has been surprisingly good all year, but I mean, like, you're not going to rely on him. Like Spencer Stastny, you know, not sure what you've got. You know, Tyson Berry's probably going to be gone. Like, these are guys like Luke Shen, you're not going to see him again. Tyson Berry, not going to see them again. Like, they've done so well despite having the most opposite bizarro Nashville defense core that, you know, I can remember in recent years. I mean, you want to go out there and spend some money and go get a guy like, gosh, I don't know, like Gothsbear, or go get like, see if you can coax Brandon Montour's, like guys like that. I mean, you know, could you imagine having what Matthias Ekholm was doing right now in Edmonton, like back in Nashville again? Incredible. This team would be incredible. And I think that's where the bigger holes are, because I mean, I trust what they've been doing with their, you know, with the forwards, and yeah, there's regression and all that stuff like that, but that can come, you know. I think that with, you know, the goaltending being just above average, I mean, the defense core, we don't talk about them a lot, but you know, it was hanging on. I mean, again, like Nashville is one of the least injured teams in the entire NHL, and you know, a Roman Yossi injury, I mean, this team is a shell no matter how good Philip Forsberg is. You don't
but
have
is there
that
part of you that's like, because they're I don't, y'all would know better than me, would you say this defense is probably in the middle somewhere in the NHL right now? They're probably middle of the road defense as a whole.
I'd say that's probably about right. I'd say that they're,
I think honestly, I think they might be slightly below average,
but like worst case, like 20th maybe.
Yeah, no, 90. no, not like super terrible, but just kind of like
not like the Sharks. The Sharks are a different kind of breed,
no,
right now.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'd say they're probably above average, but they're not what we're used to.
But see, the reason I ask that is like, do you lean more into the offense and you're just like, we'll live with the defensive issues, and like, is there a path because you're already so thin there that there's just diminishing returns? It's like the Falcons are going through this right now, and this is I'm making a football reference, but Brian's a Cowboys guy. This will work for you.
No comment.
Well, this will work in terms of like what I've said for the Cowboys, and like kind of this is kind of what Jerry Jones and Stephen Jones have built and what they kind of rely on is like, hey, we're just going to keep drafting skill position guys to put around Dak. We're going to keep adding dudes. I think they're going to draft a receiver in the first round. They drafted a bunch of offensive linemen. They've drafted Ezekiel Elliott. They've drafted CeeDee Lamb. They signed Brandon Cooks. They have understood that the path to them getting back to the Super Bowl is by leaning into, what if we have the best offensive DVOA team in football one year? Can we get through? The Falcons are doing that in the last three drafts, where they drafted Kyle Pitts, they drafted Drake London, and then they drafted Bijan Robinson. They might draft another receiver. They might draft Malik Nabers, tight end, whoever, in the top 10 this year. There's a lot of Falcons fans that want them to draft an edge because they haven't had a pass rush in forever since John Abraham. The Falcons have been terrible at rushing the passer. They went to the Super Bowl without an elite pass rush. They had the best offense. The year they went to the Super Bowl, Matt Ryan had an MVP-type season. A Philip Forsberg-type season, where it's like, I don't know if he'll ever do that again. I don't know if he'll ever have that kind of statistical season ever again. But we're going to lean into that. And they bet on, hey, if we give him Julio Jones, we give him all these guys around Matt Ryan, who's pretty good. But like, we're just going to lean in and hope it all works out. There is something too to being like, look, we're probably not ever going to have a top 10 defense with this group, where it's probably not realistic. So let's just hope we can hold the line at 20. But what if we had like the fifth best offense? What if we had like a top three offense in the sport and hung on? I think that to me is a better strategy than trying to find that middle ground between offense and defense and not having one be super far away from the other. I actually think that works more often than not.
I'll say this. If there's one coach that can do that,
yeah,
it's Andrew Brunette. And right? I think that we saw it in Florida specifically. There was a lot of offense and not a lot of defense being played. But I also think I think that it's obviously you want them both to be very good, but I definitely like the idea,
because with New Jersey, they could outscore their goaltending problems. It wasn't a defense issue. It was a goaltending issue. With Nashville, it is not that, and that is a good thing, because if you have that kind of system, I absolutely trust Andrew Brunette's offense to outscore any defensive issues that there might be. I think that if you want to look at it the other way, the Nashville Predators of 2016-17 were not some offensive juggernaut. They were built upon strong.
They were a pretty bad team.
They were not. But I think even Peter Laviolette's, the President's Trophy team was not some offensive juggernaut either. Like over an 82 game season, they didn't have any guys scoring a lot of points. They were built defensively. You had that top four still of Josi, Ellis, Subban, Ekholm. Unreal. I know, but like we've seen it before in Nashville. We've seen it before where they focus on defense and goaltending. You're not going to score on us. We could score one goal and you're not going to score on us because that's how good we are defensively. It doesn't matter if our offense ranks 25th. Our defense is going to rank in the top three, and we're going to win games because of that. So I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility for them to be like, hey, why don't we just just go in and really put pressure on the high scoring, high pace, high transition offense. Obviously you don't want to let the defense just get away, but you have some decent.
You put all your big resources in offense and you can scrape by with the defense.
See, Chase, I'm not going to forgive you for making me think about the Dallas Cowboys right now because
So unfortunately,
it is your birthday. Happy birthday, buddy!
Right now,
happy birthday.
I was getting ready to fold that in, but thank you for ruining the segue. But no, you made the point about them investing all of that stuff into the offense. Which, do it if you're going to do it now. But let's compare the two teams. So you've got your Dak Prescott, you've got your CeeDee Lamb, you've got these guys. That's your Forsberg, your O'Reilly's, your Tommy Novak. Some of these young guys, awesome. But you're sitting here on defense. Roman Josi is Nashville's Micah Parsons. That's just how it is. A guy that is going to come in there and single-handedly do it. I mean, you could also make an argument 2 years ago that Roman Josi was also the team's, now I'm forgetting his name because he was injured all year.
DeMarcus Ware?
Oh, no. I'd never forget DeMarcus Ware. How dare you?
I'm just throwing out some other edge guys.
Trayvon Diggs. Broke the interception record two years ago and went out. He played, three games out for the season. Okay, so you've got him out. Well, say Micah Parsons goes out. I mean, really comparing this to what happens if you lose Roman Josi. So that guy comes out. Behind those guys, Deron Bland comes in and breaks more NFL records with, the amount of interceptions and pick sixes. You've got, DeMarcus Lawrence. You've got all these guys. And it's kind of hard to sit there and say that, Dallas is really focused in on what the offense. No, they spent a fourth-round pick on Dak Prescott and got very lucky. CeeDee Lamb made them forget about how they mishandled Amari Cooper. No one's really talking about what the whole Michael Gallup situation has been, just a year after year, it's not working type thing. I mean, it's there is something to that, but, the Dallas offense was able to be what they were because it was almost it's kind of like with the water boy, they were so good on defense that they were just no, let's just get rid of the ball, because they were so good on defense. They were so dangerous that Dak could do what Dak could do. He could bounce back from having a subpar year to having an excellent year because there was that. I mean, and this is the thing, it looks like, it's locked in now. They went to, Dallas took them, Dallas ended up winning in overtime in the shootout. So they're going to be playing Vancouver. Roman Josi gets injured. It's Canucks in four. Five if you're lucky.
Oof.
Without Roman Josi. Think about that. So you're pushing Dante Fabbro back out there.
Are you sure, though?
I'm positive. Because, it's not even the fact that it's offensively, but just think about the dimension that adding that guy that can be that fourth. I mean, the power play. You look at that guy who is basically acting as a fourth forward, but what defenseman's going to take over or the second line, the fourth line? And not saying that it would be that this team is awful, but there's nothing. Who's going to step up in a playoff against the Canucks, a team that they've played three times, they've lost all three times. I believe they've been outscored I believe it's 13-7, I think. 5-2, yeah. 5-2, and 3-2. It's just, you can't do that. I mean, and then you compare it to like something like that. It's like, yeah, losing a Micah Parsons would be awful, but there's still other things there that have been, you know, built up. The defense is raw. It's got holes. It's old. And I'm not saying that they need to be this defensive. They don't need Matias Ekholm to play old school Matias Ekholm defense first, you know, defenseman play. But you've got to have somebody in there who can also do something else. And there's not, Carrier's getting there. I love Alex Carrier. I think he's getting there. But I mean, Roman, like, this team is not, there's no hope of like a dream run without Roman Josi. I just don't see it.
But I think you can replace Roman Josi. I think you can find someone like to replace Roman Josi. I don't think Roman Josi is this guy that like prevents
you. Recreate him in the aggregate. That's right. What you do. I think it's been my dating strategy. I don't know.
Creating a Roman Josi.
Well, that too, yeah.
You can like recreate the offense that Roman Josi provides. But I think the point is that if you go out and you had one defenseman that prevents a lot of goals, say an Alec Martinez, I don't know, just a name, and then you sign Steven Stamkos and Vladimir Tarasenko, or Steven Stamkos and Jake Gensel, or Steven Stamkos and Joe Pavelski, or whoever. I mean, those are just names that you can pick, really, whoever is the UFA that might, you know, provide some solid offensive power. But you're not creating from the back end as much, but you're adding that in the forward end. You're still having those points. So if Roman Josi goes down, yes, obviously it's a huge problem. But, you know, if you have Roman Josi score however many points, and then you also have those Steven Stamkos and whoever else score a lot of points as well, I feel like that's just, you know, I think
it's about this season right now. I mean, again, Philip Forsberg gets injured, doesn't play the first series. I could say maybe Vancouver in six. I mean, I think that they've proved that they can score without Philip Forsberg. This team without Roman Josi, like this year, right now, against Vancouver with no Roman Josi, like, that's a worse team. And there's nobody there. There's not, you can't recreate him.
But could you upgrade at the offense enough and then get somebody 75% of what Roman Josi provides
this season?
You don't even need 75% of Roman Josi. You just, again, I'm advocating that if you're going to go out there and make a splashy signing or a big trade and you want to do that this year, do it for defense. Get a guy that you don't have to sit there and go find, you know, some guy that's going to be out there and just be an absolute, you know, superstar. Like, you don't need to get a Quinn Hughes. You don't need to get a Miro Heiskanen. You don't, you know.
Well, Quinn would like to play for his brother because we just added Jack Hughes in this conversation. So Quinn Jack together, I think that's what America needs.
I mean, if you're lucky, you can figure out a way to find whatever wizardry that they used for Brent Burns. But I mean, like, you go get a guy like that, Jacob Slavin, a guy like that, you know, Zach Bogosian. And like, I don't know about that one. I'd have to talk myself into it. But I mean, like,
really?
But you need somebody that, you don't need a Roman Josi. Like, you need something, you don't even need quite like a Matias Ekholm. You need somebody in that range, though. Like, another, a guy that you can sit there and say, this is my second line defenseman that's not older than me, like McDonough. And I don't think he's older than me, but the point being is that, like, you need somebody there just because, like, this team needs somebody. Like, Roman Josi and Philip Forsberg, like, especially in this last 2 months, like, I'm not saying that they did it all because of those two guys, but those guys doing what they did really helped. And I think that they can be, they in year two of Barry Trotz, you know, hockey, I think they can be fine if they want to take, you know, whatever 2/3 of the cap space they have left and focus on shoring up the defense core and then using the rest on forwards. And still getting a good guy for forward, you know, at forward, you know, the second line is just, what is the second line? I don't know. It's nothing that's really putting a lot of fear into anybody, depending on who's playing. But I mean, you know, you've got to have that. I mean, Tommy Novak, you know, it's been crazy watching him, because it's like, anytime he has the puck on his stick, I fully expect that he's going to score. And it's not like there's anything in his technique or anything about the way he skates. I don't know what it is about Tommy Novak, but it's just like he has the puck on his stick. He's just going to be like, yeah, no, I'm going to score. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, it's nice to have that. And yes, you know, I'm not going to say that them going swinging for the fences on forward would be a bad thing. I mean, if you could get a guy like a Jake Guentzel, my God, but it'd have to be the right thing. And because I think they've made it really clear that they're not willing to sit there and put tie up a bunch of money and give guys 5-6 year contracts and put them back in the situation that, you know, they were dealing with before and still are dealing with now. I mean, Zucker, all those guys that they brought in, they're all, you know, pending free agents, so they only have a couple of years left. And so there's low risk of that. So make the big move, but make it smart. You know, don't sit there and go for a guy that you know is going to decline in like 4 years. You know, get a guy that's going to complement and play complementary hockey with Roman Josi, Dante Fabro, Alex Carrier, whoever, because you're already going to have to add somebody. You know, they're not going to sit there and say, we like who we've got with Jeremy Lazan and Tyson Berry and Luke Shen, you know, any of those guys. I just think that it would be, you know, put him like 3-4 years ago, Matthias Ekholm or Ryan Ellis, you know, like on this team, like you'd feel a lot safer about maybe this team would be able to survive a Roman Josi injury. But as it stands right now against the Vancouver Canucks in the playoffs, they're going to do better if they lose Forsberg than they ever would if they lost Josi. And it's just, again, it's because of everything that he does. And it's just less depth. So I think it's a little bit more important. If they want to swing for the fences, do it on defense. If they want to play it smart and just start shoring things up and getting those guys, signing guys to $3-4 million deals, that works too. I don't think it's going to be a let's just run it back, because this isn't a run it back roster. And I don't think anybody thinks that.
Final thing here, and we'll wrap tonight. The Preds, in terms of playoff matchup, what is the ideal matchup, and do you feel good about the Preds getting out of the first round here, Jeff Middleton?
I think so. I mean, I think I like the matchup with Vancouver a little better than I like Dallas, to be honest. I think Dallas is a phenomenal team. I think I have them.
They're going to be in the cup finals, I think.
Yeah, I have them in the cup final.
That's not good. You want to avoid that then if you're the Preds. What are the odds they get Vancouver here?
I think.
Vancouver, well, they are getting Vancouver. It is official.
Okay, so they are getting Vancouver.
I think that Vancouver has had. Vancouver is a little bit, I think, built like Nashville. I think that they're very similar rosters. I think that at the top you have guys, I mean, Elias Pettersson and Brock Besser and JT Miller. Those three are unbelievable players. Pettersson's just, I love that guy. He's unreal. He's such a phenomenal player. And obviously, you know, Quinn Hughes probably likely going to win the Norris this year. Hronek's been very good. But just kind of looking, and then Demko, obviously he's back, had a really good game against the Flames last night. Whatever day you're watching this, the 17th or the 16th, sorry, because it's now midnight and Chase's birthday. I think that when we look at just the rosters overall, I think that there are some pretty glaring holes in what the Canucks have. I think that they're coached really well for what they do have. Same thing for the Preds. I want Nils Höglander and Ilya Mikheyev on my first line? No. Brock Besser would probably move up there. He plays really well with Miller, but you know, Elias Lindholm has been terrible since coming from the Flames. Dakota Joshua is good. He's fast. Not great. He's whatever. Connor Garland's skilled player, doesn't do a lot. They just have the lineups. When you look at them kind of side by side, I think that they're pretty similar. They all top heavy talent, good kind of three players that you really have to look out for, top defenseman that is in contention for the Norris, and a very good goalie, if not great goalie. I think they match up better. I also think that they're younger. I think that they don't have as much experience. I think this is where, in a matchup against Vancouver, I think this is where that Ryan O'Reilly factor, that Luke Shen factor, I think that's where the Jason Zucker factor, I think that's where that all kind of makes a big difference in how the teams are going to perform. I think even, you know, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, those guys are battle tested in the postseason. I think that they know what, obviously they don't, you know, they don't have the cups to show for it, but they've been there. I think that that's different than what the Canucks have. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, experience isn't going to win, you know, the series, but I think it absolutely makes a difference. And I think Dallas, I just think Dallas is the more well-rounded of the teams. And I think that, you know, their depth more specifically is just unreal. So I think I do like this better for the Preds. I would say I think it goes 6 or 7 for sure. I think they need to play better than how they've looked in the last couple of games. Obviously it's the end of the season, so like, who, you know, you can't really judge that all, you know, too well, but they've got to get it back into gear. They've got to get back to what they know. And Rick Tocchet's teams are not going to go away. They're going to be pests. They're going to annoy the crap out of you. They're going to be annoying defensively. I think that's, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they match up in transition specifically. Obviously Andrew Brunette wants that a lot and a lot and a lot. And Rick Tocchet defensive, you know, obviously his team's score, but he's coached a lot of teams and they've been really focused on the defensive aspect of it as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they match up in that. I think I would pick the Preds to win. If I was, I'd probably say in 7, to be honest. I think going into Vancouver is going to be really, really tough.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where I think home ice advantage is going to be crucial here. A really big factor for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think Preds in 7.
Do you agree, Brian Baston?
So, like you said, like Vancouver's got a lot going for them. I think that they're going, you know, if you kind of go off the list and you say, okay, like, can Nashville keep pace scoring with Vancouver? And I think that, yeah, I think that they could. I think that's actually something that's actually feasible, and that's kind of crazy to think about. I think that maybe Vancouver's got a slight edge on that. But, you know, I think they can keep up with the scoring. Can they prevent goals? You know, are they going to give up less? I don't know about that. You know, that's going to be it. I will tell you this right now. My prediction could be one of two ways. It could be Canucks in 5 or Preds in 6. And the one person that's going to change this entire series, there's one player that's going to be the most important player in this series. It's not Roman Josi. It's not Philip Forsberg. Yes, Luke Shane. That's right. Nashville beats the Vancouver Canucks if UC Saros makes it happen. And there's no bigger player. And then, you know what? Fine. You want to criticize him for how his season's gone. There's probably lots of things that he's working on, probably in his head a ton about that. But like, what a year for him to have a slump, if you want to call it a slump. This is when the rubber hits the road. Now it's time to, you talk about the 2016, 2017 team. Like, this is when Pecorine all of a sudden decided, you know what? I'm just not letting goals in anymore. I mean, he wasn't having the stellar season that year. And then he goes in there and doesn't allow Chicago to score a single goal in their home arena. You know, like, that's what you need. And I think that he doesn't have to be perfect. But if we can get 75-80% of what we're used to seeing from UC Saros, this matchup chain is completely different. If Nashville can be like, all right, they might score 4 goals or they might score 3 goals and we're going to score 4 or 5. You've got a good UC Saros, somebody that can match what Demko is doing or surpass that. That's it. If Saros has, you know, if it doesn't work out for Saros, that's going to be the series. I think he's going to be more important. And as it is right now, I think we see, I think he does it. I think he does it. Present 6.
Ooh.
Yeah, I just want to add to that. I think Brian's absolutely correct, because just looking at these splits, obviously it's regular season and he hasn't played the Canucks nearly as many times as he's played the Stars, just because of, you know, Central Division, conference alignment, whatever. But, you know, career 909 save percentage against the Stars, 270 goals against. And then in the Canucks case, he's got an .897 save percentage and a goals against average of 3.04. So the difference is pretty stark. And I think obviously playoffs are a different animal, but I think that that's definitely the matchup that you need to watch if you're a Preds fan listening to this. And that's, you know, Demko is unreal. Demko is a phenomenal goaltender. And I will say, if he re-aggravates an injury, that changes everything. But I think part of it was he took a fair amount of weeks off, because I think that they wanted to really make sure that he was fully healthy, because he's unbelievable when he's on. So I think that's absolutely the matchup to watch.
I will say this: if Saros goes out first two games and they go and give up five goals in both the first two games,
oh, it's over. Yeah,
I mean, it's over. I agree. It's over. But you know what? If you're trying to salvage something, you put a Kevin Lankinen in there, because honestly, I mean, at that point you're kind of desperate. But I mean, it's got to be UC Saros, and that defense has to be there for him. The whatever reason this team has improved in so many ways, except for penalty killing, I don't know what it is on penalty kill. I think it's just because they're a little bit more, they take more risks, but it's going to be Saros. I mean, you don't need to have Forsberg scoring, having a 3-point night. You don't have to have another Roman Josi 4-point night every night against this team. They can do it. They can beat this team. I like what Nashville, you know, what the West looks like. I think if you can avoid Dallas, I like their chances against pretty much everybody else. I mean, Colorado would be a little bit difficult, but I mean, like the Kings, Vegas, you know, there's not a lot of teams in the West that really truly scare me, other than guys, you know, a team like Dallas. You know, it's a little bit different over in the East, which I'm very glad that Nashville's not over there. But, you know, like, I'm not that afraid of Edmonton right now. And that's maybe the dumbest thing I might say. And I'm sure that we'll come back to that and be like, you idiot. But I mean, Philip Forsberg had more goals than Leon Draisaitl. So, you know, hey, you know, we never know. I mean, it's going to be Saros. They want to do it. They want to invoke that miracle run team from before. It's going to be on goaltending. And that's the part of that Nashville identity that, you know, it's not ready to die yet. And I think that, you know, maybe we're waving goodbye to that era, but it's never been more important, I think, than right now. Because if they want to make a splash and actually win a round in the playoffs, UC Saros is going to be the one who does it.
I love it. Brian Bastin, what can the good folks check out from you and the team over at ontheforecheck.com this week?
Well, really enjoying the fact that we've got a matchup now, so we, you know who to start watching tape of. I've watched a lot of Dallas this year. So of course it's going to be Vancouver, who I haven't watched a ton of. So we're going to be kind of looking into that. I mean, well, I'm sure that we'll probably break down that matchup next show a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, I'm just kind of enjoying the fact we get a nice little break and we haven't had to sit with, you know, can you imagine being a Detroit fan yesterday? Like, I'm glad Nashville didn't have to deal with that. Like, Detroit, like, comes back, they tie that game. Like, all of a sudden their playoff hopes are alive. And then Philly pulls the goaltender at the very last, like almost the same time, allows the empty net goal. And then all in one fell swoop, you know, 10 minutes later, Pittsburgh, Detroit, Philadelphia all knocked out of the playoffs just based off, you know, that. I'm glad Nashville didn't have to deal with that. We were watching this game because it was just like, we want to know who we're going to play. That's it. You know, and that's nice. And so it's good to enjoy that, get a little bit of a rest. And I'm really excited to dig in and watch some Canucks film and get terrified of Quinn Hughes. So
there you go. I love it. Jeff Middleton, what about you? All over the internet this week?
So wrote a piece on John Sterling retired. Wearing my Yankees cap today. But yeah, John Sterling announced his retirement, so wrote a little thing on that. Was that? Yeah, I hope so too. I think I read somewhere that it wasn't about health reasons, just that he wasn't going on the road anymore. I think it was just kind of hard or whatever. I mean, he's 80.
It's just weird to happen mid-season, like to happen at this.
Yeah, position. No, I definitely agree. I wrote a little thing about that. Biggest piece probably this week and right now is Miami got a new hockey head coach. So we've been covering that along with some transfer portal stuff. So I have a big piece coming out hopefully by this weekend, if not earlier, on just how his press conference went, you know, how he wants to play, what he envisions for the program, all that good stuff. So have that coming out for the student newspaper here, so that's exciting, and it's gonna be fun. I'm excited for that one.
And start banging the drum for Milwaukee too. The Admirals, they've won the Central now. They've got, they're in the playoffs, and they're going to be a whole lot of fun. And, you know, hey, can you imagine getting some help, you know, maybe down the road, getting a Joakim Kamel to come up to Nashville? The guys like that might be pretty fun. So, you know, make sure you're watching, because, you know, Milwaukee, this, again, I keep saying, I said this last year, might be our last year of Carl Taylor. I told some Buffalo fans of mine, I'm like, if you're smart, that's your guy you go after. They're not going to hire him because that's not what they want to do. But if they're smart, that's who they go after. They may be a little gun shy after, what's his name? Housley. But I mean, it's cool. And like, the reason why Evangelista and Novak and Jankowski are so good is because of what Carl Taylor's done. So get in there, it's AHL TV for the playoffs. It's kind of cheap. Go do that. It's fun. And then, you know, it's nice to have both teams in the playoffs. So go watch that stuff, because it's going to be really awesome. Because you want to know how the Preds are going to do in the next few years? Watching Milwaukee will tell you a whole lot about that.
There you go. Brian Bastin, Jeff Middleton, always a pleasure. And I will talk to y'all very soon.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.